It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 449. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. I have a couple voicemail messages that I've had no time to dissect and listen and download, so they will be on next week's show. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Facebook, you can send me a friend request, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And don't forget the wiki, and that is mtswiki.com. It's weird doing this on a Tuesday night, but I'm going to be traveling and not around, so I wanted to get this show and get it posted up, so a little earlier in the week, and I have lots to talk about. One thing that a lot of listeners have recommended, and some of you have asked questions on it, is the Square service, where you can add that to your iPhone. Just a little plug that you can swipe and take credit cards. I got that yesterday. I signed up very easily. I'm going to talk about that, but I'm also going to talk about the pitfalls that I learned as I was reading reviews online to make you aware of all your options and everything that's going on with Square. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to jump right in to email, because I got lots of emails and they're big, long email. So I want to get to them right away. And we may have some music at the end of the show. Let's see what happens. So before we get started, you want your websites to load quicker. And you want to make sure that if your DNS provider goes down, you have a secondary route to your website. That is where dyn.com, D-Y-N.com comes in. With outsourced DNS, you can make sure people can get to your website at all times. Dyn has service tiers for companies of any size to get started. DYN serves more than 4 million customers around the world. So stop taking chances with uptime and start talking to DYN about best-in-class managed DNS. To get faster internet by using Dyn, visit dyn.com/podcast30. Fill out the contact form or start shopping right away and save 30% by using the promo code podcast30. So check it out. Visit dyn.com/podcast30. So last night when my wife came in, she handed me, says, "I bought you something from the Apple store." And I was like, "Oh, what'd you buy me?" And it is the Square service, which is just a little device that you plug into your iPhone and you can swipe and take credit cards. Now, I've always thought about this, but my services really don't lend itself. I very rarely have someone present me by asking for a credit card, and usually it's on the very big purchases that I can't take, which are systems. And I really never wanted to go down that path for taking credit cards. But let me tell you about this service. And let me tell you some of the pitfalls I learned as I was doing some research. First, to set it up is about 5 minutes. And they may charge you $10 for this device, but there is a redemption code that once you set up the free account, they will credit you and give you the $10 back. So it's free to get started. So how do they make money? Well, every credit card you take and process, they will take 2.75%. That is considerably low by the standard average for merchant accounts out there that I've seen, and I've priced them out. And a lot of those accounts with banks require minimums for credit card usage, they also charge you fees, and you get dinged if you're not taking enough credit cards. Now, here's the pitfalls that everybody's complaining about, and I, at least now that I know about it, I'm going to avoid it. If you don't fill out a separate merchant application and get that processed, if you charge anything over $2,000, they will hold it for 30 days, sometimes longer. If you start processing credit cards more than $2,000 a week, they will start holding everything over $2,000, and they'll hold that for 30 days. If you attempt to contact them, expect zero response. Support is completely non-existent. So know that. Know that you can only contact them via an email. And when you do, know that it will be ignored. So given that, and by the way, I've seen so many negative reviews about their support. So knowing that going in, is this service for you? If you physically take the credit card, they will take 2.75%. But if you don't have possession of the card in your hand to swipe it and you manually type in the numbers, they will take 3.5%. Now, my typical charge for a home, $200 to $300 if I'm spending 2 or 3 hours at someone's place. So I'm not afraid of swiping a few hundred here, a few hundred there. I don't have the volume that's going to require them to hold it for 30 days. It's going to be those rare instances. And at that point, I would rather do that than send someone to PayPal, because that's a whole nother story. Taking credit cards in PayPal, they charge exorbitant percentages that they take. And unless you have a physical product that you're selling, PayPal is horrible to take as a payment because you have no protection and no recourse. If you provide a service to someone and they pay via PayPal, all they have to do is complain with no proof, nothing. That money will be siphoned out of the merchant's account, and you have no recourse if you are a service account. So I've ran into this. There's ugly things in taking PayPal. I don't mind it for donations. I don't mind it for quick little payments here and there, but not as a regular place for income. There's no way I would use PayPal, just from the bad experiences that I've had with it. So keep in mind the Square service if it's right for you. If you're doing high volume or big ticket items, I would be afraid of using Square. I would look to other alternatives that are out there. Maybe even just, you know what, go to your business bank. Now, before you set up, make sure you have your EIN number or be prepared to turn over your Social Security number. And if you are doing any consulting and you do not have an EIN number, shame on you. You should never be using your Social Security number. An EIN number is free from the IRS. You go to irs.gov, follow the links, fill out the information. It is easy to get an employer identification number. That's an EIN number. So have an EIN number. Make sure you have your bank's routing number and account number. Have all that info ready, and it's going to be a 5-minute setup. Keep that in mind, and I would think that you would need all that information no matter who you're going to be dealing with for credit cards. So have all that ready. Now, if some of you have already used or are using the Square service, I want to hear from you. I want the good, the bad, the ugly. Let me know so I can do a follow-up on this. And then I will follow up and let you know as I start using it. Now, remember, I've only had it for 24 hours, and I'm not taking a credit card. I've done my homework. I'm ready, and I can take one when it happens. And I'm now not being dinged for a monthly fee while I don't take any credit cards. I think for me, it's going to work out. But if someone's going to buy a server, let's say, and it's $3,000, there's no way I am going to use that, or would I ever consider PayPal for that. This is email from Mike. Thank you for making the podcast. I truly enjoy it. The last couple podcasts, you have been going over Outlook Express and issues with messages. I have an issue that is in the same realm and I can't seem to find any fix for it, so I thought I would ask you and your listeners. I have a user that saves important emails to his network drive as a .msg file from Outlook 2010. Most of the message files he can open, but there are a few that he cannot. He receives the message, cannot read the item when he tries to open them. When I go to the network drive and try to open the MSG file, I get the same message. I had him email the message to me as an attachment. When I try to open the attached message file from inside the email message that he just sent, I get the error, "You don't have appropriate permission to perform the operation." When I save the attached MSG to my computer, I receive "cannot read the item" error again. At this point, I'm guessing the file was corrupt. That's what I'm thinking. Do you know of any repair tools for individual message files? Any ideas would be appreciated. Now, Winston from the chat replied, "Notepad++ should let you read the text from the MSG file." I think it's corrupt. I know I've been promoting the SysTools site where they have some email repair tools. They're very inexpensive. And I would look to see if they have an MSG repair tool, because it sounds like the message is corrupt, since you know you can read some but not all of them. Boy, it sounds like a corrupt message. If anybody else has any suggestions, let me know. Thanks, Mike. This is from Rich, and he's got several questions, part one, and then there's a part two. So let's give it a whirl. "I have several questions, one of which should be answered offline if you can. To keep my email from going too long, I'm splitting it up into a couple of emails. My first question is on behalf of my daughter. She works for a small company involved in healthcare, i.e. they have to be concerned about HIPAA. Awesome. The company recently relocated its main office to California, and she was promoted as part of the move so that she is the senior administrator. Although she may not be directly responsible for all of their technology, she is a very conscientious person and wants to be sure that she knows enough to be sure that all the company's needs are met. You have often given advice to aspiring tech workers about how to gain knowledge to enhance their career aspirations. Assuming that the administrator will use a trusted IT consultant, how does the administrator get the knowledge they need to intelligently communicate about the company's needs and work with the IT people to make sure they meet them? For example, you often talk about the small businesses you serve. If you had to recommend any education, formal or informal, to the owners or managers of those businesses so that they could more effectively use your services or expertise that you would recommend, keeping in mind that these people have many more responsibilities than just making sure the tech needs of the company are met." This is a great question. Unfortunately, I don't have a specific answer, except I don't know if there's books for the middle, I guess, non-full-time IT person on compliance for like HIPAA or FINRA. What I would make sure is that there are absolutely guidelines within the company that have to be upheld, that come from above for the compliance. I would be surprised that they don't offer any kind of training for critical employees or employees that are important decision makers or that work with IT and decisions that have to be made. Now, I'm going to give you an example for SOX compliance. When I was with a very big company, the individual employee did not have to worry about it as much as they had to follow the procedures and the processes that were set forth by IT and by people that were responsible for those processes, for developing them, to make sure we were SOX compliant. And we worked with consultants. We did a lot of work inside. And I'm sure the same thing is for HIPAA, where there's lots of guidelines and lots of procedures and lots of policies that are part of the healthcare organization that have to be maintained. They're going to be specific from organization to organization. So I guess the best thing would be to at least read up on what the HIPAA guidelines are. And there's lots of material. You can go to Amazon. Once you get the handle on what HIPAA is doing, which is protecting the patient's information and the privacy, then you work backwards and say, well, everything that we do, that patient's information gets touched, has to be secured, encrypted, and protected so that it can never be released or exposed to people that are not supposed to see it. So once you see that, then there are technical controls that have to be applied to protect that information, some of which your daughter is not going to have any control over. It's going to be IT. And they should be the ones setting forth saying, okay, you have wireless, you have to have this type of security, you have to have this type of sign-on. Nobody's allowed to bring a computer into a conference room and plug it in to any open jack without proper authority and permission. There's got to be tons of rules and regulations that she has to follow and be aware of just for her every day. And I don't think the business or that organization is expecting her to make decisions based on HIPAA. I would believe that they would already have people that are not only doing that, but would bring her in as needed for those decisions. I don't know if I made sense. I don't know if I would worry about it too much unless you were in the IT career path, where you now have to be aware of certain controls and certain things to protect that information. And it's all about protecting something. HIPAA is protecting the information about the patient, my medical records, if I'm on any kind of medications or any kind. PCI compliance for the credit card industry is protecting the credit card number with that person, that personal information. FINRA is protecting the financial information of individuals. SOX is protecting the shareholder and the consumer from a company that is not accurately portraying and reporting on the financials of a large organization. It's all about protecting something and making sure that it doesn't get into the wrong hands. And you got to have the controls, the policies, and the procedures to make sure that's happening. Rich, I hope that helps you. I don't think I've directly answered the question, but maybe described what it's all about. And I would have your daughter or anybody listening to this read up on what is involved with the requirements and get a fundamental understanding. Then you know what your job is, and then you can apply the fundamentals that you've learned on what the certification, what that criteria for protecting whatever it's protecting, whatever that's about, then you can apply it to your job based on your sphere of influence within the place that you work. Hopefully that helps. And he has a second part here. Here's a question for myself. How can I remove McAfee Security Scan Plus? Oh, easy. If it does not go quietly with the uninstall in programs and features, if it's Windows Vista or Windows 7, but if it's Add Remove Programs and XP, then we go to the big guns, Revo Uninstaller. That will rip it out and get rid of it. Although it might not exactly be a malicious program, I did not intentionally install it, and I can't uninstall it. And that makes it a virus as far as I'm concerned. I think it can be installed with Adobe programs if you are not careful. It does not show up in my programs and settings. I'm using Windows 7. I tried going to the McAfee folder, and the file uninstall.exe is not there. I also tried downloading something called MCPR from McAfee and ran it, but it had no effect. I tried to use CCleaner, but it also does not list the program or the uninstall programs list. I was able to disable it on startup, though. That's good. I don't think I can simply delete the folder, so what should I do? No, don't delete the folder. Download Revo Uninstaller, the free version. It will show you that program. Take the defaults. Go all the way through. Yes, 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 yes. Check all, check all. Go through. It will rip it out. It will remove it. That program has never disappointed me when I've needed to remove something. Next, I want to make your listeners aware, if they are Comcast users, that if their outgoing email suddenly stops working, that's happened, it is probably because of Comcast changing their settings and not letting people know. This happened to my daughter several weeks ago in California. It happened to a couple of my home clients. And after several calls to Comcast and to me, we got it working. I have my own domain with Bluehost, and we only use Comcast as the carrier. So it also took a call to Bluehost, excellent customer service, to get all the right settings. 2 weeks ago, after it happened to her, it happened to me in Seattle. Fortunately, her experience gave me a pretty good clue of what caused my problem, and I was able to reconfigure Outlook on all my computers to restore outgoing mail. If other listeners have this problem, they will need to change their outgoing mail port from port 25 to something else, and they may need their domain host's assistance. Last but not least, I have asked questions in past emails to help with my mother's email issue. The first time, she was 89. Wow. I just wanted to let you know that she will soon be 91 and still uses email as one of her primary methods of communication with the rest of the family. She is going great. Oh, Rich, that is awesome. Thank you. The Outlook and the port issue, yes. Comcast, I believe, used to allow people to use port 25, but I always would make sure, let's use SSL, which is port 465, or TLS, which is port 587. And I always try to set up email using those ports if the email client provides it. Now, most of my clients are Gmail or a derivative thereof, so they both work. If you're using Comcast or Verizon for that matter, they absolutely are supporting a secure connection for both POP and for SMTP. Make sure you're using the SSL ports. So this way, if they do stop using the default port 25 or port 110 for POP, you won't be impacted. Great advice, Rich. Thank you. This is from Todd. Thank you so much for such an awesome show. I just started listening, but went back through a last few years of them. Wow, that's great. You have some great stories and suggestions. I have been working on PCs since 1983 when I got my first Epson PC. I am a security professional with a large company, but my hobby is repairing PCs. I want to keep it a hobby because as soon as I get paid, it will be a job and not a hobby. And they own me. As it stands, I can take weeks to fix a PC. Of course, with that said, I have a loaner PC that runs Kubuntu with a kiosk software that has a browser and LibreOffice for them to use while I fix their PC. I have a great home network, but my repair network has 4 terabyte NAS Lite server for copying data, multiple boot CDs and USBs for repairs. I also have an old PC I use to copy data and to build my report of what I did to fix the PC and the benchmarks. I put the price it would cost if they had gone to Geek Squad. I just want to let them know what I have saved them. This whole network is behind a router to keep it separate from my network. I also buy parts on sale and parts out for PCs that are given to me. I just bought Fab's backup, but have not used it. I am rebuilding a PC this week. It's Vista, and I am upgrading to Windows 7 and upgrading the memory. When I back up with Fab's 3 on the Vista machine, can it be restored easily to a Windows 7 device? Absolutely. That's the whole point of Fab's auto backup. I know the music and pictures are fine, but what about favorites and so on? When you take a look at the default of what Fab's backs up, it will back up your profiles for Outlook if you have them, PSTs. It'll back up the profiles from Chrome, Firefox, and Internet Explorer. So all the favorites, all the settings, and it will even back up QuickBooks. There's lots of great things that it will back up, so it knows where to put them. So it will put them back to the locations that have changed in Windows 7. Even going from Windows Vista to Windows 7, remember, these directories, some of them have changed. And especially even like from XP to Windows 7. I just moved a client this week who bought a new system, the laptop. If you remember the story for the new client where I went to where the laptop and the screen was cracked, they finally got their laptop replaced. I was back there yesterday, and I took the Fab's auto backup from Windows XP and literally put it down into Windows 8, and it worked flawlessly. Very, very happy with that. He goes on to wrap up, I have learned a lot and enjoy listening live for the music. I currently have 260 gigs of music. Wow. That's great. That ranges from Dead Kennedys to ABBA. Thanks again. All right, Todd, thank you very much for that. That's great. Do not be afraid. Use your Fab's auto backup to move from Vista to Windows 7. It's going to be a piece of cake. This is a follow-up from Terrell, who asked me about what antiviruses I liked last week. He has another question. He says, thanks for the advice. I have another question. I'm trying to decide on which way to go for my IT career, and I want to know, where would I get started? Right now, I have my degree in information technology, studying for my A+, and currently working as a help desk analyst, but would like to make more money. I do plan on studying for the Network Plus next. I have just started watching your shows and see what you have knowledge in and a lot of categories. What would be the best option for me? Best option for you is what you are passionate about and what you like. I do recommend exploring the Network Plus aspect. To me, that's the most fun. I love networking more than I like anything else. One thing you also want to take a look at, maybe you want to get certified in Cisco. That may tempt you. There's lots of opportunities for Cisco certification and knowing how to configure firewalls, switches, routers, all the Cisco products. And that requires some extensive networking and lots of knowledge about security. So you might want to look down that path and check out online for some Cisco tutorials and maybe even hit Amazon and take a look at some books. There's lots of ways to go where IT can be carved up. Where I wear a bunch of hats because I work for small businesses are my main, they're my main client. And so I got to be all things to them, but it's on a much smaller scale. Now, you have your choice of going to a big company and doing something very specific in a big company, like maybe system administrator or network admin. You'll make more money, but what makes you happy? You got to enjoy getting up every day and going to work, and you got to love what you're doing. So explore everything. Explore the security area. Explore the networking. Explore maybe take a look at the at Cisco CCNA and some of the certifications for Cisco. Maybe even email administrator, things like that. What you like, when you see it, you'll know it. And you won't even have to ask because you'll know it. And when you see it and it's in front of you and you are excited about learning and about reading more about that topic, you're going to love what you're doing. And when you love what you're doing and you enjoy it and you start becoming really good at it, the money will come. This is from Tim. Hi, Mike. Heard you mention about using your Amazon link to contribute and just had a few questions regarding this. Number one, can I use the link in the UK version of Amazon? No, unfortunately. Based on the rules and regulations from Amazon, I can only get any commission from the USA Amazon site. Two, regarding privacy, can you see my purchases? No, I don't. I don't know what you, so let's say you're in the USA and you buy something using my Amazon link. I only see the item. I have no idea who purchased it. And three, will this work for any Amazon order? Pretty much any order. And the percentages vary. Like if it's electronic order, it could be 4%. But if I've had the more sales I get during the month, the higher the percentage goes on non-electronic items. So if you buy like a vacuum cleaner, I could get as high as 6.5%, maybe even 7%. So it's kind of interesting how this sliding scale works. Or is it just your referrals, i.e. ones you recommend? No, it's any purchase. And if you go to amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon, they are the URLs for you to purchase, make your purchases. It doesn't matter what you purchase. Even if I recommend it or not recommend it, whatever you purchase, once you go to the site using my link, I'll get a commission as long as it's the USA store. Tim, thank you. And even if you're outside the US and you're trying, I really appreciate it. This next email is from Christopher. Mike, we have a potential new client opportunity who has 6 Windows servers and 20 desktops. If my efforts are successful, this would be my first client with Windows servers. After a quick analysis of just the desktops, I found that there is no standard image, software, antivirus, etc. on any of the desktops, and about 3/4 of the computers are still running Windows XP. MS support ends in 400 days, actually probably less now since you sent this. My question, we use several tools to maintain our current client computers, peer-to-peer networks, standalone, but none of them are authenticating against a domain or Active Directory. Is the work we perform on computers that are associated with a domain different than those that are not? Yes, they are. You got to get and learn quickly Active Directory. You must learn that. You got to understand the implications of DNS, Integrated Active Directory. You want to learn about group policies because that's how you're going to manage the software and the software installs. And if you absolutely need to go to a class, I would go to one of those. You're looking for one of those boot camps where it's a crash course and you want to suck it all in, read as much as you can, and learn about Active Directory. If you need additional information in order to answer, please let me know. No, you know, what you really got to do, as I said, is I would get to a class where you can get away for a couple days and be force-fed everything about Active Directory. Then you need to take a machine that you have laying around and install Windows 2012 or Windows 2008 and do what they call a promotion to an Active Directory. So you got to run DC promo for domain control or promotion. And you need to go through that. You need to learn how to take a desktop and add it to the domain, then remove it from the domain. And you need to understand that. So yes, it is different. And I came from that world to supporting the peer-to-peer in the networks. I came from the exact opposite in the direction you're going. But what you're doing, it's the natural progression. And you're going to get more business clients that way. And you absolutely want to embrace it. You want to learn it. And you just want to practice, install, and play. This is from Robert. In show 447, you advised a listener to first back up the large directory structure that was left by Windows XP after upgrading to Windows 7. backing up never hurts, but this was 30 gigs, which might take a long time. I know it's going to take a long, long, long time. What I often do in such a situation is to rename the root of the directory structure by just adding -old. If any data still needs to be accessed, you will notice because the path has changed. Wait a month to see if something major happened that can be related to the renamed directory, and a month later, you can safely delete that. Now the renamed directory. Regards. Now listening from the Netherlands, but lived in New Jersey for 7 years. Robert, thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. So that's the last email. I have some music that I have to play from Ed Kowalczyk. I had the pleasure of seeing him on Sunday night with my oldest son. He's on an acoustic tour right now. He's the former lead singer of the group Live, which I've seen several times in the late 90s. Just a great singer. And he played this song Sunday night. And I had the privilege of a meet and greet after the concert where my son and I met him. And he is one of the nicest guys. And it was a lot of fun. And I want you to give a listen to Ed Kowalczyk with the song Overcome, which was on Live's CD titled 5. And this is the acoustic rendition that he performed on Sunday night.
Even now, the world is bleeding, feeling just fine. Oh, no, in our castle, where we're always free to choose, never free enough to find. I wish something would break, 'cause we're running out of time. And I am overcome, yeah. I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my lungs, yeah. I am overcome. These women in the street pulling out their hair. My master's in the yard, giving light to the unaware. This plastic little place is just a step amongst the stairs. And I am overcome, yeah. I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my lungs, yeah. Your help is here, but I'm parked in this open space, blocking the gates of love, the gates of love, the gates of love. And I am overcome, yeah. I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my
was Ed Kowalczyk, former lead singer of Live. I'll have a link to his great music from Amazon.com where you can purchase his latest albums or CDs. I still call them albums. In the middle of that song, when I was first playing it, my whole system completely crashed and I had not saved the audio for the show. Upon reboot and starting Audacity, It asked if I would like to recover the last project I was working on, and I very calmly said yes, and it recovered everything, and I was able to continue by just replaying, and of course I saved it at that point, and then just now played the song again, and I'm now wrapping up. That is awesome. Audacity has worked beautifully, and it's what I needed. A big, big, big thank you to the free software Audacity, and I am eternally grateful. All right. With that, I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. I will be back at normal time next week on Thursday night at 8 o'clock to record live. I want to thank you for your support of the show by using my Amazon links, my affiliates, the sponsor, of course, Fabs Auto Backup for Tech, Malware Bytes Pro, and our great sponsor, Dyn.com, D-Y-N.com. I want to thank everybody again for your tremendous support. Thank you, thank you. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.